All right, welcome to episode 49 of the Operators Pod. This is the Marketers Operators Pod. I don't know, what are we calling this today? We're calling it something today. We've got Connor and Sean. This is Sean's better half. I'm going to say that in this episode, Connor drops a lot of gold and Sean just looks very impressed. So
yeah. This is just before my quarterly review. So it's good I made a strong showing.
This is perfect timing for quarterly review. As always, we've got to thank our sponsors, Northbeam, Fulfill, Sendlane. This show doesn't happen without them. What do you want to say, boys? Like, this is going to be a good one.
Yeah, this is a little preview of the Marketing Operators Podcast that's coming out next week. So we have Connor, and Cody, three pillars, titans of the community, getting their own little spinoff show. And this little preview. So super happy.
I'm going to listen to it. I don't listen to our own show. Why? I'm here. But I almost never listen to new podcasts. I'm actually going to listen to this.
Dude, I listen to our own show to make sure I'm not stupid, but I'm going to listen to the other shows to make sure that I stay not stupid. I'll learn something. This episode, Connor just drops technical marketing knowledge. The stuff that you want us to talk about, but we're too dumb to talk about, Connor talks about it. So we're going to get in depth. We're going to dive into it. Episode 49 coming at you. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Operators Podcast. I want to talk about Fulfill, my ERP, and here's our journey with them, okay? We started just with warehouse management. We have five warehouses. So we have a customization warehouse. We have three nodes in the US, and we had Canada at the time. Maybe we had some international ones, but as you can see, I have way too many warehouses, and we had employees managing order flow. Wasn't a good system, right? It would break. People would ship the wrong thing. Keeping inventory in stock on the website was a mess. So I'm like, okay, we need a WMS. We started with Fulfill because it was lightweight, easy to implement, cost effective. You know me, I'm Mr. Cost Savings. So from there, we moved into a wholesale 3PL. So we added another node that just does B2B orders. And that required getting EDI set up into Fulfill, right? If you don't know what EDI is, it's like the worst technology ever. And I used to have to set them up individually with 3PLs, but by setting up with Fulfill, they can route the orders with EDI all these different places. So I don't have to go to a random 3PL from the 90s and get them to adopt Nordstrom's EDI integration or whatever. So that saves us a ton of time, a ton of money. Then we added accounting. Okay. So moving past QuickBooks. People tell me that if you're doing more than $50 million a year, you shouldn't be on QuickBooks, but we were doing over $100 million a year on QuickBooks. But at a certain point when you're manufacturing stuff and you're buying component parts, it's like, okay, we need to get on the big leagues. So we have the accounting module for Fulfill. So I'm fully set up on Fulfill. I'm probably the most complex Fulfill customer you've ever talked to. I'm like Voltron putting together all the different Fulfill pieces. We keep investing in Fulfill because the team's great. We get an ROI on the product, and they haven't tried to charge me $8 million a year or whatever NetSuite tries to charge you. So they do the implementation for us. They work with our team. It's been working. It's been set up. And now I got the infinity stones of all the different modules, and we're a fully functioning ERP, ran lightweight on the internet. Thank you, Fulfill, for doing that for us. Thank you for sponsoring the Operators Podcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Let's keep going.
Go. Welcome to Two Dummies and a Marketer, sponsored by Northbeam, Fulfill, and Sendlane. I think, Sean, you and I are the dummies in this episode. And Connor's going to
tell us things. I know about marketing. No, yeah.
It's a part of the fun. We don't know who's who.
You literally have his contact info on your phone as marketing dweeb. Right. As your business partner.
The audience will let us know in the comments which one of us is the marketer and which ones are the dummies. So that's a little fun game we're going to play.
All right. Let's get into the pod. So we've got two topics today. All marketing. I figured this is a good time to do this. There's been a lot happening. We did our e-com apocalypse episode, right? A few weeks ago, where like it felt like everything was going wrong. So Connor McDonald is here to make everybody feel good. No pressure, dude. Do not fuck this up.
It's a good week to do this because next week, 1 week after this podcast drops, early April, there's a new marketing-focused operators podcast, separate channel, separate YouTube. You get Connor, CMO of Ridge. You get Connor, head of growth over at Hexclad, and you get Cody from Jones Road Beauty. You get all three of these marketing geniuses doing a carbon copy, better version of the Operators Podcast. If you're interested in that, subscribe. But this is a little taste today.
Yeah. And I'll give an example. Fantastic episode last week with Roman, who is telling us how to like arbitrage East Asian interest rates to like finance your business through Chinese suppliers. We are going to be talking about how to set up ads in your Facebook account so you could make money. So depending on what content you're looking for, we should have multiple options coming in April.
We're already getting competitive.
Yeah, everyone clicks off because they want to know how to make ads work again. So Connor, what's the secret? How do you make ads better?
Yeah, can you start there? How to make ads better, Connor?
I'm saving it for my pod.
All right. Okay. So, there we go. It's a strong start. So let's go topic one. This one is, I've actually been following you guys for years, watching you just slay Father's Day. And that's around the corner. Most people don't realize it's around the corner. But Connor, for you, are you already starting to work on this? I guess that's my first question. And like, how far in advance does Ridge plan Father's Day, which is another big moment for you, right? Like you have multiple peaks in the year. We've talked about that in the past. Father's Day is obviously a good one for you. Can you just run through like the thinking around it and like the timing and what goes into it? And Sean, if you have anything intelligent to say that Connor misses, please, you know, you can contribute to prove you're not a dummy.
I'm bad in cleanup. That's typically how a relationship works.
Okay. So. There we go.
Yeah, awesome. No, we'll touch on a couple of things here. One, you mentioned we have kind of multiple peak periods. So we do four that are in the back half of each quarter. We're in the middle of our anniversary sale. That's the end of March. Father's Day's Q2. We've kind of invented this sweepstakes moment in Q3. And in Q4, we've got holiday. Now, two of those are much bigger than the others. And they are the ones driven by seasonal buying. So for a very long time, actually, I'll make two points here. One, when Sean and I joined Ridge, Father's Day was like not really a moment at all. It was like a couple emails on the calendar. We'd maybe do a 10% off code or a 10% off code would happen. And one of our big unlocks over time was really fully capitalizing on this moment and leaning into that period. The second point is, one of the reasons why Father's Day and Q4 are such a big opportunities for us is we can basically double our addressable market. At any off-peak periods of time, we're really largely advertising to men. And then we have such a great gifting product that we can basically double the ad account. And that's what's led to a lot of scale. So anyway, that gives some context around the importance of Father's Day for us, how it's grown over time. Now, from a content planning perspective, we do a couple things. We've been working on it over the last couple weeks. So we're just about, our Father's Day period starts May 15th is when our sale is going to start. So it starts roughly a month before Father's Day. We're planning just about 2 months before that. And we do a couple things. I'll talk to them and you guys can interrupt me like with any questions or things to add or whatever else. We start with just reviewing the previous year. So we're just going through this. We spent Q1 and Q2 of last year with a really diversified marketing mix. So we had a lot to go through in terms of by channel, what did we see working? What did we see not working? And it's going to be a difficult year to comp because we were like ripping across all channels, basically Snapchat, Twitter, TikTok, all were really strong. And that helps us contextualize what channels do we want to focus on this year and where can we improve? So those are some of the big ones. And then it comes down to pricing. Well, let me say a couple of things. One, for us this year, we launched wedding bands and we launched travel and we've got the core wallet business. What's interesting about that is Father's Day really coincides with a number of seasonal events. We're expecting summer travel to be taking off during this time. Rings, we started doing $1 million months in July of last year. So we'll have a strong focus there. And then on top of that, we have the EDC business, which benefits disproportionately from the Father's Day gifting. So we look at this basically 4 to 6 week period of time and figure out how do we want to allocate budgets across categories and channels. And then taking a step lower, we figure out How are we pricing across those different categories to best lean into the period? And that's where we'll start learning from things of previous year. Did we have success with kits driving up AOVs? How were we discounting between different material types or between different product categories? What deals did we offer exclusively to email and SMS in this time? So then we put that all together from there. We've got pricing, we've got a channel mix, and then really channel leaders from there can back into those plans. So we're looking at, hey, we need to focus on short form vertical video. That's where we saw a lot of success last year. We're seeing areas of opportunity currently or semblances of success. Now, how are we best sourcing content and editing ads so that we're going into this Father's Day period with the assets and strategy that align with kind of our overall business goals? That's a very high level overview of how we go from planning to what the channels are ultimately producing.
How far ahead of, so you say you start your sale on May 15th, Father's Day is on June 16th. Just for everybody listening, it is a month of time that you're allocating to like this period, right? So probably like what, 5 weeks-ish. How far ahead of May 15th are you guys starting advertising that Father's Day is coming? Like how far do you start seeding the idea that like you need to buy a gift soon?
So we've done it a couple of different ways in the past. We don't do explicit pre-Father's Day, Father's Day messaging. Our like gifting messaging will go live along with the sale. And it's one of the reasons why we approach it from that longer period. What we did in October, which will line up with this year as well, is we expanded into women's wallets. So in October, we were promoting our ceramic powder line to do two things. One, we can drive revenue and grow a women's business. We can also grow brand awareness in a demo that will be largely looking to gift in, you know, the following couple weeks. So this year we've got product expansions planned around that, as well as capitalizing on Mother's Day and just building brand awareness in that demo that we can capitalize on during a gifting period. But yeah, to answer your question explicitly, no Father's Day messaging before that sale period starts on the 15th.
It starts, you guys go. Like there is no preamble.
Yeah, but let's really unpack that 1-2 punch. I think apparel companies do this so well, right? If you're Ralph Lauren, you can message out, you know, Mother's Day collections, right? You can message out new spring, summer, whatever drops for your female collection. And then you can then go into dads and grads with the exact same audience you've captured over. If they didn't convert for themselves or they did convert for themselves, be like, hey, now buy new cool things for other people in your life, right? So, you know, before May 15th, you know what happens? Mother's Day. So we're going to try pushing Mother's Day this year, right? With our women's collection that has, you know, amazing reception so far. And I want to go all the way back to the beginning before we get more into marketing stuff. We talked about these four different events. Even with what I think is best in class, leaning into different holiday periods and creating our own holidays, Q4 is still 50% of our revenue. So no matter how hard we try, it is very difficult to beat seasonal demand. Like people just want to buy for Father's Day and then they really want to buy gifts. And even if we are giving away sweet cars or have an awesome sale for anniversary or cool new things, really hard to shift that revenue earlier in the year. We try every single year, but we've shifted maybe 5 percentage points after all of this effort.
But what I'll also say is it didn't happened last year, but basically for 3 years in a row, our June was just as big as the previous November to give you a sense of scale. So Q4 continues to be 50% of revenue because we've continued to scale up Q4, but we basically created the previous Q4's level of demand in June, which has really helped unlock a lot of scale.
Are we going to do it again this year, Connor?
We hit a big November. We had a big November, so hopefully, but we've got big shoes to fill.
Connor, yeah, do you, I got two questions. Do you change, like, are there fundamental, other than TAM, right? Are there fundamental differences in how you run your media mix in Q4 to Father's Day? Like, does the season actually impact your media mix?
Not, I wouldn't say meaningfully. Well, actually, yeah. So we can walk through it a little bit. We activate partners disproportionately in a sale period. So like May 15th to June 15th, same with Sweep, same with Q4. So all of a sudden they're taking a much larger percentage of our budget, which isn't the case in a July or a April. So a larger percentage is coming from our YouTube partners. We're also taking this opportunity to like reactivate a lot of the creators we've been engaging with throughout the year. So that's not to say we're not working with YouTubers or TikTokers in April period, but we are just making sure that we are retaining them and reactivating them during these sale periods because we know that's when intent is highest and we can capture a lot of the demand that we've created. So that's one thing that changes. Depending on the season, something like a searcher or shopping, the high intent categories can scale up. That's a huge difference between a Father's Day and a anniversary sale. Like people don't become more likely to search for men's wallet during the Ridge anniversary sale, but they do when they're actually searching for a good gift for their husband or dad.
You mean you're not big enough yet to move consumer demand in markets? That's not, you're
not
there
yet?
No, not
quite. We're thinking probably 2026 is when it'll become that sort of event. Yeah. So those are kind of the large changes. It all depends on the season. Last year, Facebook became a larger percentage of our budget. We saw fantastic success across the Meta platform. So we actually went in planning for it to take up 55, 60% of our budget. We ended up a bit above that. So it all depends on where we're seeing success. Currently during our anniversary sale, we've got a larger percentage going to YouTube. So aside from the partners and the search and shopping kind of trends that we can rely on and we can really plan for, it really comes down to where are we seeing success in the moment and allocating budgets on shorter timeframes.
Interesting. Your, would you say, so Sean, you said like 50% of your revenue is in Q4. It's, Lomi is very similar to this. Peel a Case is a little different because we cycle with the phone buying so much. Right, that we actually do get a bit of a bump. We get this bump like back to school and then iPhone launch in August and September. But Lomi is very much like the last 6 weeks of the year. It's so much of our revenue is around gifting in the D2C channels. Do you find that your media spend is proportionate to the amount of revenue? So like, will you spend 50% of your ad dollars in Q4 or do they bleed out a little more? Like, will you pre-spend into Q4? You've already said you don't really do that into Father's Day, right? But like going into Q4, you do your sweeps thing in Q3. Do you then like ramp it down and then really go try to spend like half the money in November and December?
I would say we probably spend slightly less than half the money because MER is best in that period, right? So even though, you know, revenue's half, it's the most efficient revenue, the most profitable revenue. So maybe 40% of our spend is in Q4. And like in Q1, it's the least efficient period. Even with the anniversary and everything going on, we'll have the lowest MER and then it spikes up in Q2, it'll drop down in Q3, and then it'll spike, you know, hard in Q4.
Got it.
I'll be really honest with you. The cost savings is probably the biggest driver for me. I think I'm going to save like over $100,000 a year switching. And there is nothing I would not do to save $100,000 on SaaS. Like the whatever the darkest thing you're thinking, yeah, that's me trying to save money on SaaS. So that's a big driver. And look, I believe in the product. I've seen it. I've seen the demos. People are like, is the migration going to be a pain in the ass? Yes. That is why I did not migrate in Q4. It's never going to be painless to do one of these things, right? Like, I've been on Klaviyo for 10 years. It's gonna take some time and effort to put it in, but Jimmy is the type of guy who's committed to make it as seamless as possible. So I'm very, very excited to switch to SendLane. They're a startup, man. I think their culture matches mine. I'm excited to be there. So Photoshop a SendLane logo on my jersey because that's where I'm going, guys.
Love it.
Connor, do you... at Ridge, do you control, is all the product team roll up to you or is product a separate org? I'm curious how you guys handle pricing.
Oh yeah. So this is a good question. We could talk through this. We handle pricing for in a couple ways. One, for a long time, we did very simple pricing. We've got our kits, which are our largest percentage. That's where we can highlight up to 30% off. We're pairing the key organizer, our key case, along with the wallet. And then we would do 20% off some of the older SKUs. So anything launched in the last couple months, we would maintain full price during the sale. We really started adopting that a year ago or so. What we're also focused on now, and Father's Day was the first time we did this last year, where depending on where we're over-inventoried, we can do slightly larger discounts. And an example that I'll give you is our Forged Carbon wallet last year. We were over-inventoried. And where those typically get discounted to, they're like a standard 20% off. We went to 30%, and it fell below the $100 mark, and it became like a top six SKU. Otherwise, it's a top 15, top 20 SKU, something like that. So with a couple dollar difference, we're able to drive up the percentage off and push volume towards a product that we kind of, from a strategic perspective, want to move inventory through.
Do you guys, Sean, do you not, I guess, like, does your product team not have, like, do they have margin targets that they have to hit, or like as part of their measurement for success? Like, is there any conflict between product and marketing, I guess is what I'm getting at for these times?
We're just building these bridges for the first time. Like who owns MSRP, who owns markdowns, who owns prices? Like, we're just figuring that out. I was just told the idea of product team owning margin targets, like maybe 8 weeks ago, maybe 12 weeks ago. Before, they would make something and then we would just kind of fight about what the price should be and what it costs. And then we should be like, we should get that cost lower. So we're adding structure for the first time. You know, I do think it's going to be owned by either merchandising or like the inventory ordering team or product or something like that. But disproportionately, Connor has had more say in price and discounting and bundling than anybody else in the organization.
That, which is usual in like most D2C brands, right? D2C companies, like D2C dominant companies. You'll see marketing takes a lead on that. But traditionally in consumer, there is like product owners, like product managers who have like, they own the P&L for a product, right? And that marketing is in service to those orgs, like those divisions in a business. D2C just tends to be this one place where I usually don't see it.
Yeah, well, here's some history of the company. We didn't get rid of anything until last year. So if we launched something, we had it forever. So if we had too much inventory, it wasn't that big of a deal. Last year was the first time we looked at inventory balancing and be like, oh fuck, do we have too much of something or not enough of something? So we just started doing that. So like Connor says, like, oh yeah, we're over inventoried in something. Let's release it into different channels or mark it down or whatever. It is less than a year old for us doing that. So we've just added seasonality to the business for the first time.
I'd love to hear, I want to go back to Connor. You said that when you and Sean joined Ridge, that Father's Day wasn't really a thing. How, I'd love both of you guys, like, how did you guys make it a thing? Like, can you remember this far back? Like what, how long did it take to turn Father's Day into a major event for Ridge?
This is a good memory test. I want to hear Connor's history of like how we started spending money there. And then I think I know when I started thinking about it. So little memory test, Connor, when did we start doing it?
It must have been 2017 was when I remember like sending a handful of emails. And that was, I also think at this point, email was done by a different group. So we were like just coordinating these other people to like send emails for Ridge. And that was the gist of the Father's Day plan was we were going to do, I don't even think there was like a code available on the site. I think it was like an email, just a couple email campaigns that maybe had a discount. That's what I remember. And then, yeah, it's just slowly developed over time. The period slowly extended. We started doing like site-wide discounts. It wasn't until 2018, 2019 where we started being more strategic about when and why we wanted to scale spend. And then it just became like larger and larger channel activation. So all of a sudden we're spending seven figures on partnerships. We're activating email newsletters. We're across a bunch of channels. We're doing like dedicated landing page. Like those are all things that have happened basically between 2018 and 2024.
And it was every year you'd add a little more, a little more, a little more.
Yeah, that's what it, yeah, totally. Yeah. And I mean, the discount's gotten better over time. We've gotten, at one point we got rid of codes. So we got rid of codes in Q4 of 2022, because that was the first time where it was like, What?
That must have helped. That almost always is a win to like dump
code. Yeah. I mean, we used to just do like site-wide 10% off. This was like the standard feel D2C thing from a couple years ago. And then you never see 100% redemption on the code. So it's just like natural point of friction that people don't understand how to redeem the discount. So we were able to do that as well as then have different discounts across our different categories. And like what I described earlier, where we could discount certain products a little bit more, whether that's kits or individual SKUs or whatever else. So we just developed more and more control, dialed in the offer further, expanded channels, and it's just slowly kind of escalated from there.
So I don't know if Sean, if you wanted to say something, but I have such a tactical question for Connor. Like, do you actually get as crazy at Ridge to make sure that the messaging is consistent between like all of your channels? Like, it's like Father's Day is clearly like whatever your core gifting message is that what your YouTubers are saying? Is that what's going out on Snap and newsletters? And like, are people just seeing the same damn thing everywhere? Like echo chambery? Is that how you guys set it up?
So we like some of the key items that get delivered before any campaign are, well, we've been doing copy deliverables for a long time, and we'll establish like brand first copy, like why is Father's Day special? And like, what is the fodder that we want to speak to across maybe some of our email, some of our like more own channel, social captions, things like that. We have a certain set of deliverables for, and then we have more like direct response copy where it's like, how are we ultimately positioning value props and the discount along with the Father's Day sale? So those two things get delivered and very easily get pulled across all the things you mentioned, all of paid social. What are we getting into email newsletters? A handful of those headlines and slogans, the call to actions can get pulled through partnerships, although we really give them a lot of flexibility in terms of how those ad reads sound. That, from my perspective, is one of the simplest things to deliver, and then it can proliferate across channels. So that's been a key one for us for a couple years. The second one is, and we don't have too many examples of this, Q4 was one, our current anniversary sale is another, where it's like, how are we establishing that same sort of deliverable, but as like visual guidelines, not as prescriptive as, hey, here are our like two or three like images that are brand approved, that are going out, but just like, how are we treating headlines and color and images so that we can establish some level of consistency without compromising the flexibility that certain channels need to continue to perform?
I just wanted to say that this is fun for me because it's like, this is a trip down memory lane. Connor talking about 2017, and like anybody listening, you know, for the audience should just understand that we had no idea what we were doing not that long ago. Like talking about 2017, I remember us doing Father's Day because Google said that's when people search for men's wallets. So I mean, I think we did a Google study or like working with the Google team. They're like, yeah, people really are searching for men's wallets in, you know, June. So you should start spending money there. And then that's the following year in 2018 when we actually built campaigns around it. And then I distinctly remember fighting with Connor about getting rid of coupon codes. I'm like, no, because we all, so like, you know, going back to the history, 2016, 2017, we only did one sale a year. We would only have a coupon code on the website one time, and it was for Black Friday. That was the only time you could get a discount on Ridge Wallets. And we're like, we're protecting brand or whatever. And it was a coupon code. I think it was 15% off. And I remember fighting each other just internally, like, is this the year we go to 20% off? Like, is that what we're going to have to do? Like, and just how silly it is that like, now we're like a real company that has like, and we still don't have it all figured out. I'm going to look back in 2 years and be like, we are so fucking dumb. But like, we're talking about like, yeah, we're going to have stuff that goes out of stock and we can discount that more because we're not going to sell it anymore. And it's like, yeah, anyone listening, you're dumb right now and you're going to be dumb in the future, but you get a little bit smarter every time.
Well, this is why I wanted to ask you guys. Cause like I've just knowing you now for a number of years, like watching the progression of Ridge, especially around Father's Day and seeing some of the numbers you put up, I'm like, there's a lot to unpack here for people that, you know, most D2C operators, like they figure out like, holy shit, this Q4 is a thing. And they don't really ever get around to like finding the other things. Like I had a call with a friend of mine his market, it's a local business. They do landscaping, right? Part of their big part of their business is pest control. And she's been firing up. She's like, I'm tasked with lead gen for the business. It's all local in our like little city. And she's like, the offer that's not working. She's like, it's just pest control. And the first thing I did was open up Google search and Google Trends. And I'm like, there's no fucking demand for pest control in March in Canada. They're frozen. Every bug is frozen. there's nobody's fighting bugs right now. They're all dead. So I'm like, call me again in 60 days when there's actual like in-market demand. But this is good. I like hearing the history of it because it's, I think every brand that's on that, like trying to go from like 10 to 50 or 50 to 100 sort of needs to figure out the other peaks.
Totally. Yeah. We worked, because the opposite of that is when Sean and I were running the agency, we worked with another client who I won't talk to specifically about, but they went the opposite route where they were like, they were a big gifting product. They did 70% of their revenue in Q4. And they were like, oh, we're going to build our whole business around just selling for this like 60-day period. And that's like, that also turned out to be like an unsustainable strategy where it was like, oh, let's be super, super lean and then expect to just make all the money in this 60-day period. And you need to be building awareness throughout the year. You need to be capturing some of that intent throughout the year. So you need to be creating these additional marketing moments. And then you don't need to be putting all your eggs in the November and December basket. So I think just brands go about that different ways.
Well, also, what are you going to do with your team the rest of the year, right? Like it's the iron getting sharper. Like we fuck up anniversary or we fuck up sweeps. It's like, okay, everyone remember, don't do that for Q4, right? It's just more attempts, more shots on goal to learn. And I just want to, you know, a quick reminder for all the brands here. We will do more money in the 6 weeks from May 15th to the end of June than we did in all of 2019. So it's like a period we've just turned on, right? And like, because there's natural demand there, we've leaned into it, we get better at it. But like, that is how you actually meaningfully move up the revenue curve. It's like finding new pockets of demand to actually take advantage of, right? It's a new resource to extract. It makes your job way fucking easier.
Yeah, I think your categories are also interesting, guys. Like the rings also comes online kind of May, June. You know, you've got wedding season, right? That's like peak time. And you know damn well that the dude is like the last guy to figure out what his fucking ring is going to be. Like for sure. That's actually like the other reason I love your category is like selling gifts for guys means that the women are buying and they're actually good gift givers, whereas most men are terrible gift givers, right? I have the opposite problem. It's like Lomi is a Mother's Day gift, not a Father's Day gift. I keep telling my team, like, 1 year, we're going to figure out how to make Father's Day happen. Like, we're going to figure out the, like, men don't like to take out the trash message, and it'll actually hit. But for the most part, it's women.
Hey, Matt, right? You should just pivot to barbecues. You have the compostable thing, and you get a barbecue going, you have all of summer covered.
Summer's actually a good season for us because of the pest thing. Right? Like rotting food and all the dinner parties and all that stuff. Like the whole, like, and it's just when people think about people, especially in hot states, Lomi does well because shit rots faster and there's way more bugs. Right. So like I could show you a map on where we do well. And I can pinpoint Lomi usage to size and frequency of pests. So like if you have bears, you would love this thing. You know, if you're in an area with like a desert, there's lots of ants, also love this thing. Like, there's very clear pain around pests. So I got you.
If you're spending more than $1 million a year on paid ads, you probably have some amount of wasted spend. We all do. Marketing is the biggest line item on Ridge's P&L. So we spend more on marketing than we do on SaaS, people, or COGS. And 1% wasted spend can totally make or break a brand, right? And how do you determine if it's a channel messing up or it's an ad messing up or if it's your team messing up? You need an independent source of truth there. So we recommend Northbeam multi-touch attribution. So what does that actually do? Facebook in platform wants you to spend more money on Facebook, right? They want to tell you that all of your sales are coming from Facebook. Google wants to say all of the sales are coming from Google, right? And you probably use Google Analytics, which is a last click attribution platform designed to make Google look better, right? So someone Googles your brand off of a Facebook ad, clicks a branded search term, who gets that sale? GA is going to say it's Google. Google Conversion Pixel is going to say it's Google. Facebook's going to say it's Facebook. How do you make sense out of that in this world? That's where Northbeam MTA comes in. A multi-touch attribution tool takes all of that data, all of their historical data, the billions in ad dollars that they've seen run through their pixel and their ad platform, and they determine the actual breakdown and who deserves the credit. So they got a team of data scientists from Stanford, Harvard, they got PhDs, and they've been working on this model for 6+ years. Pre-COVID, they were early movers in this space, and they know marketing attribution better than anybody else. Data is super flexible. They have more reports and metrics than any other platform out there. Over 450 you can choose from. I look at 5 and I use it to determine if I'm wasting money on different ad platforms. Do you think it's time to get on TikTok? Well, the best way to know that is to be able to compare TikTok versus a Facebook versus anything else. That's what Northbeam can do. And don't just take my word for it. Everyone on the podcast uses it. I've been on Northbeam. I was the very first customer 6+ years ago. Jason uses it. Dr. Squatch uses it. BlendJet, Reef Sandals, all 9-figure brands who love and use Northbeam every single day. So what are you waiting for? Get a demo. Go to northbeam.io. Click the link in the description. Tell them the operator sent you, and we're here to help. So thank you so much, guys. Thank you for the support. If you're ready to check out and get to the next level of ad spend, check out Northbeam. Thank you.
I want to pivot to this, like, because we've been talking a lot about all these activations and how you've layered them in over years. There's been a lot of pain in Meta in the last 30 days. One thing I struggle with to give solid advice on is channel diversification. I tend to be in camp, and I think Sean, you are, I'm pretty sure Connor, you are, like, Meta can do so much for a brand. Like, you really don't need to mess around with much else for so long. But when it breaks, inevitably everybody is left sort of sitting there saying, like, now what? Right? So do you think maybe today we could just go through, like, what are some of the criteria or rules or variables that you guys think of for brands, like, broadly, you can even say, like, how you've done it, for when to start thinking about layering in additional channels on top of a Meta? Like, if Meta is the lead horse, it's like, what next and how to think about it?
Okay. Connor's going to have a very impactful, thoughtful, technical marketing answer. And I'm going to have an analogy. That's typically how we operate. I think of it as crop rotation, right? Like, you need different crops. You need diversity of crops because eventually you get locusts and then eat all of them. And then there's like a famine, right? And we have a mutual friend, I'm not going to say her name, but their brand's struggling right now because they were very dependent on the Meta ecosystem, right? And years ago, I was like, you got to get on Amazon. And she's like, I fucking hate Amazon. And I'm like, you got to try this thing or this thing. And, you know, they have a little bit of diversification, but eventually the famine will roll through. Like, it happens to everybody. It happens all the time. And you need enough diversification to survive, right? Undoubtedly, Meta is harder this year than it was last year. It is about as hard as 2022 or about as hard as iOS 14. That's my opinion. Connor will have a more technical opinion. So we're a low point. We're in a famine for Meta right now. Ridge is doing fine because we have Amazon, because we have influencer content, because we have wholesale. It makes us survive the famine until Meta gets better again, if it ever does, right? But Connor, what's your technical point of view?
Yeah, well, I was actually going to give a little bit more context to describe how Ridge has developed its marketing mix over time. Because again, Sean made the point earlier, when we started, we didn't quite know what we were doing. But one of the key insights to Ridge's early success was, really, we had a ton of advantages as a brand. We had a highly differentiated product. We've got great margins, great payment terms. Like, the economics of the business are fantastic. And we have a really large addressable market. So our marketing strategy...
Oh, sorry, a joke. And a really handsome CEO. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, that was Daniel Kane at the time. Sean was the lowly COO at this time. But
Like I said, very handsome CEO.
Yeah, just making that clear for everybody. So anyway, that led us to like all of our initial wins were easy. It was like if we could get out in front of new, largely male audiences, everything would just kind of work. Sean at the time, when him and I first met, his whole strategy was just buying like ad spots on Dude, I Want That and dig.com, like just random stuff that would just work. Anyway, there's all sorts of examples of us just like in a really unsophisticated way, driving a ton of net new awareness and it really benefiting the business quickly. I think both of us would say that in hindsight, we would have loved to have just focused on and gotten really good at Facebook. There's no reason we couldn't have been one of those brands who scales to $50, $75, $100 million off of a Facebook and a YouTube or something like that. But that's how we've landed where we are today. So we can talk about the current meta examples and kind of the order of operations that we've put into it. We started really seeing. Are you guys hearing that scratching noise in the back?
I did slightly. Just there.
It's not that bad. Is it going to continue?
Do you have a hamster? is that an animal of some kind?
All right. Well, here we can keep this in the episode. Yeah, dude. I used to do the Taboola ads myself. I mean, this is 2016 Ridge, so this is back in the agency days. But I was like, we got to diversify, guys. I'm not so sure about this Facebook bullshit. So I started just like I would run Taboola ads, and they worked. If you go back and look at the GA, dude, I mean, the CAC was like $15. But to Connor's point, that's a very small win. That's a little penny win. And we totally could have just did $80 million that year if we just focused on Facebook and figured that shit out. We didn't know how good we had it, right? But anyway, yeah. Continue.
So, that gives a bit of the history of Ridge and how the marketing mix has developed. So we get into like this early March period. Facebook really started falling apart for us in late February. But in early March,
we're in the present time.
Present day, this month. Yeah. And Sean's heard me run through this whole thing like 6 times over the last 10 days. So we can see it one more time. So we end up like really identifying this issue with Meta and really across all social platforms. Like we just haven't seen strong success in this early or in the late February period, early March. We just launched our sale and it was like just a softer reception than we had initially projected. So it's like, okay, let's dive in here. People are experiencing all sorts of strange issues, like whether it's by device type or operating system. For us, what seemed to have the biggest impact is a very simple thing that people hate to talk about. It's just a significantly higher CPM year over year. So if you look across most of our top of funnel channels, the efficiency at which we were acquiring a customer, impression to conversion, regardless of click-through rate or cost, we were slightly better year over year. Our AOV is slightly up, but the cost of each of those impressions was up like 60%. Largely Facebook. I mentioned this earlier, but in Q1 and Q2 of last year, we were really well diversified before seeing like a lot of strong Meta success late Q2 of last year and then through most of 2023. So a big reason for that CPM increase year over year is a larger percentage of the budget going to Meta. But then we're seeing the same thing across all channels. Snap, for whatever reasons, up 140% year over year. YouTube, same sort of deal. TikTok, same sort of deal. So these things are all just posing a cost issue. So we took multiple steps. One was, if everything's going to cost more, like what are the own things that we can do to alleviate some of that pressure? So we launched a number of conversion rate tests. We did test reducing the price on a couple of the key SKUs that I'd mentioned. So let's just take like the super low hanging fruit. We tested all of that in IntelliGems. So we measured for a profit per user increase. We kind of like recalibrated our email and SMS strategy. So let's lean in a little bit further. That's the easiest revenue we're gonna generate. And then kind of moving up the funnel here, we did a lot of like auditing of previous year's results. What are some more learnings that we can take? We tried everything. We like turned on older ads. We like iterated on some previous ads. No, like, significant wins. I mean, frankly, March has continued to be hard. Just but walking through how we've approached it, that was a big step. We reallocated budgets. So looking at performance year over year by channel, knowing that we're not driving the same efficiency that we were last year, how can we better allocate? Moved budget from TikTok to YouTube Shorts and Snapchat. Facebook's CPM has gone down in this time. So the way we've been looking at our business is we had this 28-day period from February 22nd to March 19th. And in that same period, we were running an incrementality test as well. So we're basically able to measure the incremental lift throughout this period as our budget changes shift, which is a little bit of a softer science because you're looking at like an aggregate of the whole period. But overall, like, giving us some confidence that the changes that we are making through the course of this 4-week period are correct. So anyway, we were driving down impressions. We were doing what we could to improve conversion rate. And that was like our kind of holistic approach to trying to make the most of what is like undoubtedly a super difficult period.
Mm. Have you, when you're looking at all of these channels, Connor, what are the variables that you pay attention to know? Okay, it's like, so you just mentioned we moved some budget from TikTok to YouTube Shorts, right? What were you seeing from YouTube Shorts that indicated that this would be a good move, like a reallocation of cash?
Yeah, yeah. Well, so there's go ahead, Sean.
This is a great time to thank our sponsor, Northbeam.
I was about to say, this is a tee up.
Because we use one day click Northbeam multi-touch attribution metrics. Connor, go ahead and plug away.
But yeah, all of this is going to done in Northbeam. I had the thought last week that my stress levels are very correlated with the amount of times Northbeam is open in my browser. I had probably 10 or 11 Northbeam tabs open last week as we're like digging through everything. So yeah, they played an important role in the whole thing. So you asked about like from TikTok to YouTube Shorts. Looking at year-over-year data, we were seeing stronger performance from YouTube Shorts. So that's like the easiest kind of approach, both short form, vertical video, like incredibly similar ad placements, seeing stronger performance on YouTube Shorts. And then second is, and this is where like just logic plays some sort of role, is YouTube Shorts was coming at like a 60% lower CPM. So if we can get the same 1-day or 30-day click ROAS from YouTube Shorts that we do from TikTok, and at the same time drive 2 times as many impressions, we'll make that rotation whenever we can. So that was like some of the simpler decisions we made throughout this.
So Connor, does CPM matter?
So CPM, Sean and I joke about this because people love to say CPM doesn't matter. CPM 100% matters, at the very least from an allocation standpoint. Like, how are you cost effectively reaching people? You have a set of channels that you can do that with. If you are sitting in one channel trying to optimize between ad sets, there's not a lot you can do from a CPM perspective. So it doesn't make a ton of sense to get hung up on it. But we look at the business a lot more holistically than that.
Me and Connor talk about this literally 3 times a week. And my wisdom on this is that CPM matters, of course, like duh, but you don't have very much control over it. So I think it's the most important variable, but it's the most important variable that you cannot control. So looking at Meta performance year over year, at least for our account, and I can't share the screenshot, I think, because it was going to be my Meta and they're not allowing me to share it. But CPMs were trending at 2023 levels up until the second week of February, where they shot up to 2022 levels. It's a 50% jump in CPM. The lines just immediately diverge and they've just stayed at the 2022 levels. So CPM is 50% higher for us than it was last year. So of course, ad results are going to suffer. Now, we're still able to put up solid growth. Maybe that's because, you know, we're better as a business. We have more products. We have product diversification. We are better at converting people. We have higher AOVs. So conversion rates up, AOVs up. So that helps offset that. But then additionally, Meta probably got better at finding purchasers. So even though CPM's higher, it's a more qualified audience. All of those things work together. But undoubtedly, when you reach 50% less people with every dollar, it is going to be a more difficult environment, even with all those, brand specific improvements we're making. So I think CPM is the most important thing. It's the only thing you can't control though. So Connor,
would you, Sean, same question for you. Would you guys advise, like, so somebody listening to this right now, right, is not doing $100, $200, $300 million a year. They're probably like 5 million, 10 million, 20 million. Would you advise channel diversification before they work on, like you guys have said, like you worked on AOV, you worked on product categories, like you did a lot of off platform work. Is that step one for people? Like just to boil, like to make this as simple as possible. Like, would you say like before you go play around with other channels, you know, focus there. Like if you haven't done the work here, then there's no point in going to other channels. Is that a fair thing to say in your experience?
Yeah, I think all that off-platform work, as you mentioned, is necessary before expanding to at least any other paid social channels. Like, you should be able to get, it's all category and brand dependent. So I don't think there's like, it's kind of silly to be like, you get to 10 million or 20 million.
Sure.
I do think it's all relative, but if you can drive traffic via Facebook and then optimize that traffic for conversion rate and AOV and LTV, like that should get you very far. And then once you've dialed in those off-platform metrics, how you're converting people, what they're buying, how you're retaining them, it should be easier to then port that over to a YouTube Shorts, a TikTok, or something else. So that's my answer there, where you can like very strategically kind of build redundancy across funnels and platforms. I think you get into channels that are significantly different, like a YouTube partnerships, it might not be as dependent, or that funnel might need to look completely different the way those people are buying products. But yeah, overall, dial in Facebook and that'll get you, you should have a long runway ahead of you just there.
Yeah, weakness as a strength, right? A weakness in our past was that we didn't go deeper onto the best channel, which was Facebook. We went wider, but now we just have a lot of knowledge of different channels, what works, what doesn't, so that we can, if the golden goose stops laying eggs, we have some bronze and silver gooses that can still produce something for us, right? So
that's helpful. I think to folks listening, because it's probably the number one question I get right now is like, I'm so damn old, Facebook will come back. It always does. Right. You know, it's, where do they go? Do you guys, if you're seeing CPMs up on multiple platforms, is this macro or is this platforms just juicing earnings?
So we've reached the point where we just wildly speculate.
Yes. It's entertainment value, Connor. Yeah. Like,
no, I'm with you.
The listeners.
I'd never seen, I told Sean this weeks ago, I was like, I'd never seen anything like it. All, like, we're talking YouTube, Snapchat, TikTok, and Facebook, all up 60-70% year over year. And we've talked about the reasons why it could be occurring on Facebook. People have talked about some of the issues, whether it's, you know, iOS updates or whatever, but it's like, how does that explain Snap and TikTok and YouTube increasing at the same rate? Sean, do you have any theses or a thesis for why that could be the case?
I've already told Connor my wild theories, but they're not separate pillars of the ad ecosystems. Like, TikTok spends a lot of money on Meta and vice versa, and Snapchat spends money on Reddit and whatever else. So I think it's a cartel, is my opinion, is that a Meta's charging more. Oh, we can charge more, right? And it's the market's moving together. And what's funny is the further you get away from the cartel, the less noticeable you'll seem. Like, Twitter CPMs aren't up at all, but that's because nobody talks to Elon Musk is what happens. He's outside the cartel. That's my opinion.
CPMs are not up. I can tell you that. Yeah, definitely not.
So that's, I'll say that you mentioned TV. That's like one of our midterm steps. Going back to this period in early March where we were struggling, we had initial budget allocation decisions that we could make, and we kind of like recalibrate our like short-term plan. We had a then midterm goal of like reintroducing some channels that we'd been on. So YouTube InStream was a part of that. Twitter was a part of that, where it's like, let's get more iron in the fire elsewhere. And then the third one was more of a midterm goal, where it's like, we weren't in the position to turn on linear TV like the next week or something. But looking at April and preparing for Father's Day, we very clearly just need more alternatives. So how are we building up the stable of channels that we have available to us so that we can better respond to changes in Meta, or in this case, like all the social platforms we've currently been on?
Yeah. And the only advice I have for the audience, maybe this is one of the clip moments of the show, is make the changes when you don't have to. Because it sucks to make changes from a place of panic. Like, you can't just go on Amazon right now. You can't just get into wholesale right now. That shit takes months or a year plus. We are so lucky that like we've invested a year ago or 2 years ago, because wholesale is up 400% year over year right now. So we're able to have these new channels that are actively growing. And you can only do that from a position of strength, only do that when the sun's shining. And that's not very good advice right now if like your fucking business is blowing up. It's just like you should have did something earlier, but next time things are good, prepare for when they're gonna suck. That's my advice.
I think that's great advice. Like that, where I think a lot of people struggle, and personally where I struggle, is that runs so counter to the just focus on getting great at Meta. Like that is the common D2C advice. Is like, and when shit's good, just focus on getting better at Meta. It's scaling, right? Like, don't get distracted. Yeah, pick a freaking reason why you shouldn't do it. But it's not always going to be great, right? And there's moments where it isn't. So like, the other side of the argument is you should absolutely have some diversification, particularly around like, how do people find out about you?
Yeah.
Like, just straight up.
It's our weakness has become a strength, that like we should have got better at Meta years ago, but we were open to spending money with Dude I Want That and dig.com. So now we work with YouTube influencers. Kind of all comes together, guys.
Do you see the Marquez Brownlee partnership as like a great alternative to a top of funnel, like let's build more awareness? Or I don't know if I asked you this question. I wonder how much of his audience you guys already have.
Right. Yeah. So we treated that. We had like a line item in the strategy as well, where it's like, how are we creating like artificial newness, is what I was calling it internally. We had a product launch on Thursday, which was already planned. This is not artificial newness. This is literal newness. These Hyperlime products that we came out with. So that is like, and those are our best ads in the account right now. But along with that, we kind of officially launched our Marquez funnel. I wanted to hold off till April, but we pulled that forward a little bit. And then we worked with another creator, Jerry Rig Everything, whose content we got ad rights to. So we launched these like new top of funnel efforts that we could hopefully find more success with relative to our evergreen and anniversary campaigns that we had running. So that was a very key piece of the strategy as well.
You know, and Matt, you asked the question, what percentage of his audience do we have? Well, his audience, he has 20 million subscribers, right? And we've probably sold wallets to 500,000 of them. That's just like a rough guess or whatever. But if you show everyone on earth a photo of Marquez Brownlee, how many people would be like, I know that guy? I don't know.
About 20
100,
million.
Yeah, like 100 million, like a fuck ton of people. So I think there's as his audience grows, we can grow with that and just capture a larger percentage. And honestly, I think I've said this, like we actually don't do very well in like the Mac OS tech community.
Yeah.
So I think we're getting better at that.
Yeah, for sure.
One point of, I mean, if we just talk about diversifying, so we said channels, I said, even within Facebook, what campaigns are we launching? In terms of things that we've built over the last 2 years that have benefited us in this moment, it's category expansion. So like rings are far less affected by EDC. It's just a smaller line of business. We can still grow it at 150% plus year over year. And then we have travel in line with that. So that's another thing that's like also easy to say. You're not going to launch a whole new product category next week, but having more options available to us has been valuable. And then historically, international has been a place where it's been easier to grow. But that's currently not the place right now, because it's also those are meta-dependent regions. So the EDC business in the U.S. as well as international has faced the most headwinds so far this month.
Yeah, it's products, markets, products, markets, and channels always. Those are like the three major levers that a business has, and that while things are good, you should be investing in all three.
Totally.
Right.
All right.
Is that the pod? Should we wrap it there? Do you guys feel like, is that it?
Connor, is there anything else you want to say on your second shot at the Operators Podcast?
No, I think we covered a lot of ground. Thank you for having me on episode 49 of Operators. As Sean and Matt mentioned, we've got marketing operators coming out soon. So tune in. We'll be going deep on all D2C knowledge. I'm on Twitter at C-O-U-U-O-R. It's Connor, but with the N's upside down. And lastly, if you heard my dogs barking in the background, I apologize. I've got like a farm of a house here with a couple dogs and cats. So appreciate the patience. And yeah, look forward to you listening in for marketing operators. Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Number one podcast on earth. Thank you.